well in your beds.
Because if this thing comes true, there ain't gonna be any more.
It's an elevator. Somebody sent those dents up here to get us. Now, there's no controls inside, but there's maintenance overrides in there.
You were. I was wrong. We were so wrong. We must leave.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussion. I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how's it going, sir?
I'm well.
Excellent. Tonight, it's just me and you. We usually have other co-hosts, but they're not here because they were not able to view the topic that we're discussing. And the topic...
They don't have the fortitude.
Exactly. Or they have some other excuse. I know Mike says, I'm just watching all this other stuff, and it's on my agenda.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
If that were true, he wouldn't have to watch 15 million movies in between Christmas and New Year's.
That's a good point. Yeah. Oh, and the best is when I said this topic is really good. He goes, "I've been saying this for 2 years," and it's like, "Yeah, but you haven't watched it."
No. So, he was talking that about. He made that comment about the Americans. He mentioned the Americans a long time ago. When I brought it up.
I just finished
that series. So.
So you binged through all the episodes.
Yeah, I got through it. It's 6 seasons available on Amazon Prime. Season 6 was probably my least favorite of all the seasons, but it's still worth watching.
And that's the one that the last season of the whole series?
Yes.
Okay, so it's the 6 seasons series. That's I've noticed that a lot of shows, not all, I mean, Game of Thrones is 7 or 8 or whatever it is, but a lot of shows usually end around 6, and anytime they go further than that, you usually have some issues. I'm told.
I have come to believe in my own moral code that 5 seasons is the correct number of seasons.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense. Because a lot of times they don't have a true plan when they suddenly have a hit on their hands. They go, "Oh, we got to do something." And they
exactly.
Very well. I think Lost was the first big show that did that, right? That ended at 6. And
I'm fairly certain I own that on disc.
A show that I've been considering to rewatch again. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, there was so much stink over the finale and people being disappointed with it. So I would like to check it out again and see how it holds up.
Yeah, me too. I remember I enjoyed it a lot when I watched it.
Me too.
Yeah, and I did it all binge too. I think you do too, right? Because you don't watch TV regular.
Actually, Lost was one of the very few television shows I still watched when it was aired.
Okay, yeah, and
that may have been the last one.
Right. Yeah. The binging really is a fairly new phenomenon, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But because ever since Netflix just dropped entire seasons like 5 or 6 years ago,
mm-hmm.
I
was wrong. Lost was 6 seasons.
Very well. So let's see a couple of things here. Who are we? Dark Discussion. It's a podcast that discusses dark things, specifically horror
shadows.
Films. Well, shadow monsters, I guess. I'm sure there's such a thing. But shadows and ghosts and science fiction stuff and fantasy and thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, midnight movies, art house and whatnot. Usually on the dark side. If it's not on the quote-unquote dark, it's still usually genre stuff, such as like occasional superhero film or action film or whatnot. Before we get into any further of that stuff, Eric, you do another podcast with your buddy Dan, plus you do a few other podcasts with me.
I do way too. The one I do with Dan is a general interest podcast called the Ascanty Podcast. That's spelled A-S-K-A-N-C-I-T-Y. The other podcasts I do with you and Mike are spinoffs of this one. One is the Game of Thrones podcast called You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, which should be back this spring slash summer for the last season of that show. There's also another one we do about the Westworld show from HBO called Bullets, Brothels, and Bots. That comes back who knows when. And then you and Mike do another one about the American Gods show. I think it was confirmed it's actually coming back, but I don't know when.
Yeah, I'm not sure either, actually. So whenever these shows appear, that's when these podcasts will come back. So let's see here. Eric, like I said, we have darkdiscussions.com where you can find all the episodes of the podcast as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. But what else can they find on darkdiscussions.com?
Oh, they can find a bunch of stuff. They can find a bunch of links over on the right-hand side of the page to all of our friends. They can find articles on various topics. And they can find a link to our Patreon account on the front page. Patreon is an online service that allows you artists such as podcasters. That's us. If you'd like to help us offset the cost of producing the podcast, because that's not free, please follow the link on discussions.com or go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions. For every $5 a month you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to submit a topic for us to possibly cover. Topics are put together and drawn from on a quarterly basis for us to do a show on. So we appreciate all of your support. And if you're not supporting us already, please do so and go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions.
Let's see what else. Any news that we would like to bring up? Anything of note?
Nope. I'm not the news guy. All you guys talk about that. I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But don't you listen to some podcasts that do news type stuff? Like the Slash film, that don't they do that kind of stuff?
A little bit, I guess.
You just don't like participating in that.
Yeah, I just. See, it goes along with my whole trailer avoidance thing. I just try. All I do is each week check to see what movies are coming out and see if anything strikes my fancy. So see what's being released. I look at the theaters to see what's being released. Every once in a while, I'll run across something somewhere. But in general, I just try and stay ignorant. Because as they say, ignorance is bliss.
Let's see. Any information, updates, how's Michigan and the weather and all that good stuff?
You just can't stand having a short episode. You just can't stand it.
All right. So enough of that. No, that sucks. I guess we could probably get into our topic tonight. So why don't you let everybody know what we're going to discuss tonight?
Tonight, Phil and I are going to discuss the Netflix original series, Ozark, starring Jason Bateman and Laura Linney.
We moved here to start over, and it's been hard.
Wendy?
Sometimes, if you don't move forward, you die.
If we had just kept our heads down, Wendy.
There's nothing we can do about that now. We're committed.
Oh, yeah?
We have made promises to our shareholders about this casino, and I don't think we want to annoy our shareholders.
I want you to admit something. I want you to admit this is all about you and has nothing to do with what is best for us.
You have done nothing but fight me on this.
I was trying to protect our family.
That is such a tired excuse.
Let's pause there. A marriage is only as good as its trust.
So you're moving money in the new casino, and you're asking me not to tell your wife.
In a nutshell.
I'm not your fucking marriage counselor.
Few people get my client's attention the way you have.
Wendy Bird.
I wasn't sure if I should call you.
If you can't get what you want with reason,
you have to get it with force.
Broken promises got consequences.
Things are gonna get ugly.
Sometimes I think you forget who you're talking to.
Your husband is in grave danger.
I don't need to go in there.
We need to take Navarro down.
You lie to your wife. You lie to me. And you lie to yourself. What do you want?
I believe that you and Wendy can be happy.
Save it. I'm not bribing you to make us happy.
Now, Eric, what made us decide to do an episode like this? We did a couple of episodes like this in the past. Mm-hmm. But what makes this TV show qualify for a worthy discussion?
Well, it's really good and it's really dark. basically, I watched it the day it came out last year, and I was like, this is really good. You got to check it out. And they're like, yeah. And then I was like, this is really good. You got to check it out. And they were like, yeah. And then a year went by and season two came out, and I was like, oh, season two is coming out. You got to watch season one so you can watch season two. And you're like, yeah. Whatever. And then I was like, oh, I finished season two. It was really good. And you were like, yeah, whatever. And then you started watching it and you're like, oh my God, this is the best show ever.
Yes. Yes. I think the thing that pushed me to watch this, and for example, Jessica Jones and one or two other shows, was when you said, hey, I'm willing to do an episode on it. Then if you say that, then, you know, so you could say, Days of Our Lives, the soap opera. Phil, I'll do an episode. All right, then I guess I'll check the show out.
You, sir, are addicted to podcasting.
I guess. But yes. I've decided to check it out after you watch season two. I kind of went in completely blind, but basically you mentioning that it was just drop season two, and then you hear a little buzz on it, and then you said you would probably do an episode. I said, all right, I'll check it out. And yeah, after the first 30 minutes, basically figuratively screamed out through text, this is the best show ever.
And you flew through those two seasons.
Yeah, I
was impressed.
I stayed up on a work night one night till like 3:30, 4 in the morning. That's stupid I was to do there. So I had like 3 hours of sleep that night. But yeah, I blew right through it. So yeah, let's discuss how we heard about the show first. So how did you hear about the show?
I'm pretty sure Netflix was pushing it in my face as something I'd enjoy. And a lot of that stuff I ignore from them. But Jason Bateman caught my attention because I've become a big fan of his over the last couple of years. And season one of Ozark came out before Game Night. But since then, Game Night is one of my favorite movies of this year. And I've also enjoyed him in some other stuff, as including The Gift. So, yeah, I've become a ardent Jason Bateman fan. Of course, I've loved Laura Linney for years. So when I saw that, I was like, ooh, yes, I will check that out. And I did and enjoyed it immensely.
Yeah, I know that's true. I mean, you like Primal Fear, so I know you were a Linney fan from the back in the day. But I would agree about Bateman films from The Kingdom, The Gift, and whatever, and Game Night. He was really awesome. And he was an actor I never really cared for that much. And he was always stuck as a character actor, too. And he's mm-hmm. he's literally reinvented himself and pretty close to as A-list as you can get.
And one quality he has that I appreciate is that he has the capability of being a dick, but you don't hold it against him. like in this series and even a little bit in Game Night, he's like very mean to people, but at the same time you don't not like him for it.
Yeah, that is true. He was and had been typecast a lot as the jerk. Not a bad guy, but the jerk. Mm-hmm. And as a supporting role in a lot of films. And I remember there was some article in a review, he was in a film, and I think it was The Gift, where someone actually wrote that in the review saying how he is always perfect for these jerk type roles for whatever reason. And
at this point, some of the other players in this show have started to take off as well. I didn't realize until I just looked up the credits that one of the major characters in this show is played by Peter Mullen, who also had one of my episodes. He was featured in one of my very favorite episodes in season two of Westworld. And then Julia Garner, who has a major role in this series, she, while I was watching The Americans, she pops up in season 3, 4, and 5. And actually, I think she's in the final season a little bit, too. So, yeah, the other actors in this show are starting to come into their own as well. So I really think it's just a really strong cast in this show. It's quite enjoyable for myself.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Peter Mullen has kind of had a rejuvenation. The first time I ever seen him, and you have too, was one of our Patreon discussions. But we had both seen the film a long time ago. Session 9.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because he was the star in that. And then, yeah, he just kind of disappeared, at least for me. And then suddenly he popped up in Westworld. And then obviously this show here. Another thing about this cast is that we named 4 people there, but the entire cast, and most of them are unknowns or character actors or small bit players in other TV or movies. But they all absolutely shine in this show. I don't think there's a weak performance at all. The kids to characters that are played by, the actors that play the FBI agent or the Ruth, we'll discuss Ruth, her uncles. I mean, oh, go on.
Yeah. I was just going to say, it's kind of amazing. There are, I was just counting here, there's at least 15 significant characters, if not 20, which is a lot. And there's not a bad one in the bunch, in my opinion.
Right, right. Yeah, and even the true supporting players, like the realtor / strip joint manager. I mean, are solid.
Don't worry, folks. That'll make more sense once we get into it.
Yeah, yeah. And even smaller roles than his, like the funeral parlor owner. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody is just fantastic in this TV show.
I'm sorry. I derailed you. You did not get to state where you heard about this.
Oh, yeah. I heard about it here and there, and I think it was honestly from you way back, maybe when you first watched the show, or when you were listing stuff out earlier this year about shows that, because I've texted you a couple times, what's worth watching on Netflix, because there's just so much crap there that it's like, what's good and what's not. And
right.
And you mentioned this one a couple of times, and the reason I didn't bother seeing it was, is people say, oh, like Breaking Bad, but instead of the desert, it's in the mountains or whatever.
Well, and I understand when people say that. I do.
Yeah. And to be honest, it's not because I dislike Breaking Bad, but even though that was a great show and had some really good characters, it overwhelm me like it overwhelms, say, other folks like you. I think a lot of people think that show's the best in it, and it really is good, but it holds in my remembrance of great television than, say, Game of Thrones or something. So it was like, yeah, all right, yeah, you know, I mean, that was the reason why I was avoiding this one here. But it always interested me, because I remember the last thing I ever saw with about the Ozark or that area of the country was the Jennifer Lawrence film I have, and the one that probably made her a star, which was Winter's Bone.
Yeah.
The film always intrigued me and was a film that I always wanted to go back to see. I had seen it at the theaters and I haven't seen it since. And so the Ozarks in that movie. So this one always had an interest, even if I didn't go as far as jumping in to view it. But yeah, I pretty much think I heard about it from you, Eric, to be honest.
Okay.
And that's it. I don't think really, I mean, I know here and there you've seen on Facebook or someone talking about something, but it was always something I never bothered really reading any people's opinions on, because it was just something I had never, you know, interested me at any point. But I'll say this, how wrong I was to wait an entire year until second season two was released.
Well, you got to enjoy it all at once. So that might have been more fun.
Actually, yeah.
Because you didn't have to wait the year to see what happens next.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's true. Because I remember like a lot of shows that I dumped, like The Strain or Walking Dead or various other shows. There was I forget the guy that was in Lost that played Sawyer. He was in a space alien show. It was on for a couple seasons.
I got no idea what you're talking about there.
Yeah, I forget the name of it, but it was Mike had seen it too, and he thought it was pretty solid. When it left the air for the break, it was never something that I was excited to, and then when it did come back, it's like, who cares? Mm-hmm. But another thing, too, is that not only was I able to, like you said, I get to watch all the episodes at once, two seasons, and they fairly flow pretty good. You know, it's not like a big gap between the season finale and the season intro to season two. But also, you can binge them. You don't have to wait weekly, right?
So, right.
And that's huge versus a lot of these other shows that I just named were all weekly shows. And actually, there was one show, and you're going to get a kick out of it, that I did watch weekly. And boy, did you bust me for it all the time because I always said it sucked. And that was the Mist TV show.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And why you do that to yourself, you're like, oh, this is awful. Let's watch more.
Yes, yes. And as popped up on Netflix or whatever, people are saying watching it, and they all said it sucked. And it's like, yeah, oh, that's the only one. Thank God. And I know Jason Lloyd, he hated it too. But
I think you should watch it again just to be sure.
Oh, my God. Dude, you should watch it. It's
no, you watch it again and just let me know.
Yeah, I doubt it ain't gonna happen. Yeah, so let's see. What about other things? Where would you stack this TV show up with a lot of the modern genre stuff
In the past few years? I would say that Game of Thrones, Westworld, and Breaking Bad are all better than it.
Yep.
After that, I'd probably have to think long and hard on a case-by-case basis for a few shows, but it's better than most.
Okay, very well. Yeah, for me, I would say Game of Thrones is better, and that's about it. I think this is the second best TV I've seen. And
nice.
Yeah, that's
I'm glad solid. You like it that much.
Yeah, yeah. I've watched it various episodes over and over. You know, when I only have an hour to watch something, I just throw one of the episodes on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's solid. I enjoyed it a lot. All right, so
you want to go into the premise of the show and what it's all about?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, the central character of the show, at least at the
wiki.
Is there a wiki on this?
Well, there's probably.
Well, yeah, here. There is, and it's accurate if a little vague. It says, a financial advisor drags his family from Chicago to the Missouri Ozarks, where he must launder $500 million in 5 years to appease a drug boss. Not yeah. inaccurate, but it doesn't really get into all the wrinkles.
It has a lot of wrinkles, yeah.
There's a lot of wrinkles. Yeah, so that's the basic premise. In the first episode of the show, we meet Marty Bird, who's played by Jason Bateman, who is a financial consultant. And he works at a small company with a few guys. I don't know if they were his friends before that started, but they all seemed to be
pretty
friendly.
It was college.
His college buddies?
College friend, yeah.
All right. Yeah. And one of their clients is laundering money through them on behalf of a Mexican drug cartel. And they're aware of it, and they're on board, and they're doing it because it's easy money, so to speak. And as it turns out, the easy money isn't enough money for one of them. And we meet the cartel boss who shows up in episode one to inquire about some missing money. And as it turns out, I don't even remember the guy's name, but Jason Bateman's partner, Marty Bird's partner in this financial consulting firm.
Bruce, maybe? I think his name's
Bruce. Bruce, yeah. It wasn't good enough for him to just make the money laundering the money. He was also skimming, and to the tune of $8 million. So the cartel boss shows up, and he's basically fishing, and Bruce caves and fesses up. And apparently Marty actually did not know that the skimming was going on. He knew that they were laundering drug money, but he didn't know that, that Bruce was skimming off the top. And basically the cartel boss whacks his partner and is about to whack Marty when he comes up with, he has this brochure from the Ozarks that they were talking about earlier, and he comes up with this, just pulls it completely out of his ass. this song and dance about going down to the Ozarks and how it's a resort place and it's easier to launder money down there, and he can make up for what was skimmed and yada yada yada. Please give him a chance, don't kill him. And the drug dude says, yeah, okay, you better hope you're right that you can pull this off. Start with the $8 million that was skimmed. You've got a month. And that's basically how the series gets kicked off.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. I think it may be 3 months, to be honest.
Is it 3 months? Okay.
Yeah. And
it has been a while since I actually watched the show. You're fresher on it than I am.
Yeah. I just rewatched it again with my wife, as I was telling you off air. A couple other things was that Bruce also was an informant for the FBI, and it was either he was entrapped by the FBI to help them or something. It's very vague.
Okay.
I'm not really sure that the whole thing, but he was working with the FBI as one of the reveals that we learned later in season one, even though he's already dead and whacked.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing he was entrapped, probably, because the guy that leads the FBI investigation is probably one of the greatest sociopaths.
I was going to say, he's not what you call morally sound.
No, not at all. Or sane, probably, too. So this is a lot of interesting characters.
I forgot to mention, on top of everything else that's going on, Marty's wife, Wendy, played by Laura Linney, he has hired a private detective who has discovered that she is having an affair and provided him with a video of her having sex with somebody else. And that's actually in the first scene we see Marty. He's actually watching that video, and it's just not revealed till later that that's his wife in the video.
Right, we're just thinking he's watching
porn at work.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so but yeah, it's interesting how the whole show starts off, because Marty's life is in the dumps, and it has nothing to do with the cartel. It has to do with the personal life of the discovering his wife has been cheating on him.
Yes.
So we're introduced to a lot of pretty good characters in the first few episodes of the season. We obviously, there's Marty and his wife, and then his two children, who are probably the in every episode for the two seasons, so they're the stars, I guess. So it's, you know, it's a family dynamic. But we meet Dell, who is the representative of the cartel that hires Marty and his Bruce and that company to do the laundering.
And just to be clear about Dell, usually in Hollywood movies, you see two types of Mexicans. There's the dirty, grimy Mexicans, and there's the slick, suave Mexicans. And Dell is definitely of the slick, suave variety.
Yeah, you know what he kind of reminds me of? He reminds me of like Joe Pesci from Goodfellas.
Kind of, yeah.
Except better looking.
Yeah.
Yeah. The actor that plays him is actually a guy named Jose Morales, who played... The only other time I've ever seen him in anything was the movie La Bamba, where he plays Richie Valens's brother, older brother. Yeah. But yeah, he's pretty solid here, and he's a pretty awesome sociopath as well. This show is really good with sociopaths, I'll tell you that.
There's a few of them.
Yeah. No doubt. Then we meet Roy Petty. He's the head of the FBI that's trying to take down the cartel.
Oh, man. And he is just as scary as the cartel guy.
Yeah. Yeah. He's nuts. This actor, Jason Butler Harner, don't know him. I tried to find other things he did of note. I couldn't really find anything. But he's awesome. His character's crazy. And like you said, he's as scary as the cartel. And also, it's funny, too, is that the FBI, when he's trying to do the investigation, is saying, forget it. We're more concerned about terrorists and various other groups. Who cares about this war on drugs?
Uh-huh.
But for whatever reason, we find out later the reason he's so up on this war on drugs. We find out that his mother happens to have behavioral health issues because she's an addict.
She's a junkie, Phil.
Yes.
She's a junkie.
And so I think that may be the driving force for him to care about the war on drugs versus terrorism and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, a junkie.
Well, and
yeah.
He also happens to be homosexual, which is kind of unfortunate because I guess homosexual character time goes by, but it's still not common. And this one happens to be a dangerous psychopath.
Yes, yes, yes. So I don't think their intention was to say that because right.
No. I don't think it was either. I'm just saying some people are probably going to take that away.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, similar to when other ethnicities, like Italians, were always portrayed as gangsters back in the day, and they were all, people thought it was not right. Here, this guy is just pretty bad. But it's an important aspect because of how what he does later in season one.
Yeah, he actually seduces somebody.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting, and it also shows his confliction of him as well, because more important than the people that he actually becomes fond of is to take down the cartel, and everybody is just collateral damage. Even people that he cares. The only person that's not collateral damage to him is his mother. Everybody else is, who cares?
Expendable, yep.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of interesting. So these are the people that we meet before we head to the Ozarks.
Mm-hmm.
But when we get to the Ozarks, which is at the end of episode one, we get a really great number of new characters.
Yes. Before, I just want to mention that in Chicago, the way things wrap up there is that Wendy Bird, the wife, for a moment is contemplating running away with her lover and empties out their bank accounts, which tips off the FBI that gets involved, which alarms the cartel, and the whole thing becomes a big mess. And during the big mess, Wendy's lover, I forget his name, he gets thrown off the 17th floor of a building and splats in the middle of the road. And that might be my favorite scene in the whole show. Because at the time, Marty has found out about them and what's going on and that she's trying to run. And he is headed there to confront them. And as he's crossing the street, her lover splats on the street right in front of him.
Right.
I love his reaction because he stands there for a second, looking at the dead guy in the street, and then looks around, and a bunch of people are stopped and looked for a second, then just keep on walking. And he starts to turn around, turns back, looks at the guy again
to make sure it's,
and then turns around and walks away. just the way he's not alarmed, he's just confused. And once he's figured out what's going on, he's okay, back to where I was.
right, because only a day or two earlier, he saw stuff as more horrendous than that. So he's already desensitized, basically.
right. And that leads to, by the end of the episode, he delivers one of my favorite lines of the whole show to his wife, Wendy, which is, the satisfying sound of your lover's body hitting the thing that gets me to sleep at night.
Yes.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was harsh as it could be. There's no doubt.
Oh, by the way, spoiler warning.
Yes.
Whoops.
Yes.
Whoops.
Yes.
Throw a spoiler warning up at the beginning if you would, Phil. Because I just did that.
Sure. Yeah. This all takes place in the first episode anyway. So, if you don't like the first episode, because I've seen some people on Facebook that we associate with through the various genre groups that we're in say that they're not interested, or they stopped watching it, or they thought it was horror.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah, and it's curious because most of the people that we've talked to on Facebook have been so on it, and it's because they're just straight horror fans and they're not looking for just good genre TV.
Right.
So that's kind of curious.
I actually asked why because they said they thought it was going to be horror. I said, why did you think it was going to be horror? And they were like, well, because everybody in the horror groups is talking about it. But it's more like Breaking Bad. And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, yeah, that's not what they thought it was going to be. I was like, yeah, but Breaking Bad is good.
Exactly. They probably didn't like Breaking Bad either, I guess. And not because it's a bad show. It's just that I guess they just want straight horror stuff.
Which is fine. It astounds me that people can watch this and not be entertained.
I would concur with that. So Marty is basically being blackmailed by the mob or Mexican mob or
cartel.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's another thing that I like about this show too is the cartel is portrayed like the mob. You know, I mean, they're like the Italian mob or the Irish mob or the Jewish mob, or whatever that we're so used to. It's not.
They actually, just like the mob with alcohol back in the day, they don't actually have a vested interest in drugs. Their interest is in money. It's just a good way to make lots of it.
Exactly. Yeah. So the big difference between this show and Breaking Bad is Breaking Bad was more lower street level type. While this show here, it's top level. It's more like Goodfellas type.
Well, Breaking Bad was more about the manufacturing and distribution of the drugs, whereas this is the financial side. This is the money laundering.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a fair comparison, or opposites, I should say.
I read a description of this show that I thought was perfect, which is this is Breaking Bad meets Deliverance.
Yeah, that's you know, that's true. They say that, and yet the characters in this show are, even the quote unquote Deliverance characters, are people that I have known or seen. So in other words, it's not like,
yeah, but they're total rednecks.
They may have
all their teeth, but they're still total rednecks.
Yes. I would agree with that statement. And that's the intent. It's basically another review I saw was it's a fish out of the water show. It's basically taking upper middle class or bourgeois family from Chicago and dropping them into the middle of nowhere, Missouri, with, like you said, a large part of the locals after all the tourists go home for the winter are what you would expect, locals and, you know, trailer people and things of that nature.
And what makes this show tick for me is the fact that Marty Bird is a smart guy and he comes up with smart plans. He just comes up with all of his smart plans without all the information. So when he goes to implement his smart plans, there seems to be always something that makes his smart plan work against him. So he's got to come up with another smart plan, and he just keeps on reformulating and reformulating and reformulating, trying to jump from rock to rock in the middle of the lava flow, if you will. Just trying to save his ass over and over and over again.
Yeah, he's very apt to change with the flow,
when he has to.
He's very dynamic.
Exactly. And yeah. Because he has this plan about how he's going to go to the Ozarks and acquire a bunch of businesses to launder money through for the cartel. And that all would have been well and good, except in the process, he steps on the toes of the local drug dealers who are trying to distribute heroin and really don't appreciate him coming in and disrupting that. So he's got to deal with them. And then that doesn't make the cartel happy. So they get mad at him again. And then so he comes up with this other plan that's going to make everybody happy, which is really kind of a genius plan. And then somebody does something stupid and shoots that to shit. And it just keeps on going and going and going like that, where he's constantly got to come up with something new because things just keep going wrong.
You're right. And then, you know, even when he gets this great new plan, he forgets that there's politicians and then there's the union, which is owned by the Irish mob of St. Louis. You know,
Kansas City.
Oh, Kansas City.
Yeah.
You're right.
Kansas City mob, they call them.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, there's a lot of hiccups that go on. And also, a couple of interesting traits about Marty, too, is that his willingness to forgive easily and also to trust. And when he does it to the correct people, he gets 100% loyalty. And when he does it to the wrong people, it leads down to crapper.
I think one of the most interesting relationships between characters in this show is between Marty Bird and Ruth Langmore. We meet the Langmores, who are a redneck family down there who are known for being criminals. And her in particular, apparently she is a well-known thief in the area. And they meet because she, when they move down to the Ozarks, they have this $8 million from the cartel that they're going to have to launder. And they're staying in a hotel when they first get there because they got to find a place to live. And Ruth actually steals part of that $8 million out of their hotel room. And so Marty eventually tracks her down and does fast talking, as only Marty Bird can do, and convinces the rest of her family that if they take this money, it's really, really, really going to just lead to a whole bunch of bad things happening to their family. And so they kind of get set up as foils to each other at that point, because Ruth does some fast talking of her own and almost convinces her father to kill Marty on the spot.
her uncle.
Uncle. But he does some even faster talking and gets out of it and gets his money back. And so they are set up as antagonists for most of the first season. And then eventually start to develop a business relationship. And I think into season two, it actually becomes something more than a business relationship, and they actually start to kind of care about each other.
Right. Yeah. It's a curious relationship because, first of all, I think the proper term isn't redneck. I think it's rural, working class individuals.
Okay, Phil. Whatever makes you feel better.
But
the FBI agent's mom is a junkie.
You're right. I'd be a behavioral health individual.
Junk.
So Ruth is interesting because, yeah, she's suddenly getting respect from someone out of the blue. Right? They're not treating her like white trash criminal that everybody else does, because Marty says, do you want to manage this? I'll give you a salary of this. Mm-hmm. And then when she asks for things later, like, well, I want my own office. And he goes, okay. And she's like, a candy bar? You know, I mean, that's basically.
Yeah. He keeps on asking for more, and he keeps on saying yes. because she becomes an integral part of the operation. And I really think he respects her more than anybody else in her life, because when you get down to it, she may not be educated, but as they might say in your neck of the woods, Phil, she's wicked smart. And Marty recognizes that, and it's like, hey, if I can get this person on my side, she can make my life a lot easier dealing with some of this stuff.
Right. Absolutely. And yeah, because she, if he shows her, in other words, he acts as if he's sometimes clueless, but you know, he's really thinking, and he knows. So even though he likes Ruth, he's also knows he's using her, but not in a negative way, in a business way. In other words, he's paying her fairly and all that. So, right. So she is someone that is smart and able to get things done, and the wheels turning without any issues. Mm-hmm. And so he knows this, and he therefore trusts her, and therefore their relationship, I guess, blooms in a sense because
of that. And the way it all forms is that she helps him formulate a plan to, I mean, he goes to the owner of a strip club in the area and makes him an offer, and he basically tells him to get bent. So he comes up with this plan with Ruth of how to kind of do a hostile takeover of the strip club, and does that. And then he puts her in charge of it, which was brilliant, actually, because she's really, really good at it. And the strip club generates a large amount of income in cash, which is perfect for money laundering purposes.
Right, exactly, because it's all cash money, exactly. And then money laundering, or any company that's a front for the mob or cartel or whatever, you can funnel money in, overcharge things, you know, whatever, and it all is fine and dandy because the books look good, even if they're quote unquote cooked,
right?
First, in a sense, yeah, and being the type of person Ruth is, a criminal, she has no issue, you know, participating in this, for example, because the people they have to get are either clueless people like the realtor slash manager of the strip club, or they have to get people that are apt to stretch their morals a little differently than the rest of us. Mm-hmm. And Ruth is most certainly that type of person. The actress that plays Ruth, as you mentioned, Julia Garner, is actually from New York City. And if you hear her, in interviews based off of this show, she does a fantastic phony accent for someone.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, exactly. So her accent is basically like Mike, co-host Mike, and in real life. So her family includes her two uncles, and then her two cousins. And then her father happens to be in jail because of what we would call, I think it's called patricide. Is that
patricide?
Thank you. Yeah. So he's in jail for killing his father. And
is that what he's in jail for?
That's right.
I didn't realize that.
Yep. Believe it or not. Yeah. And then, so they live in these three or four trailers around, this like dead end that is like right on the water. Yeah, so that's how they live. And then we really get to meet Wyatt, who is the older cousin, a lot. He's really smart as well, but he has no real ethical or criminal behavior in him like Bruce.
He's played by Charlie Tahan.
From Super Doc Times.
Yes, I was hoping you would say it. He's also in the Hulu series of Castle Rock that I believe just finished up their first season.
Oh.
And apparently, I'm looking at his credits here. I guess he was in the Gotham TV show as well.
Yeah, that's right. I heard that. Yeah, he has a starring role in that, I think, is one of the main characters. Or that's what I heard. I haven't seen it, so I'm not 100% sure. But I remember heard that he had a big role of a fairly important character. And have you seen Castle Rock with him in it, by any chance?
I saw, like, the first half of the season. And
okay.
It's not that I didn't enjoy it. I just got busy and forgot to keep watching.
Right. Okay. And then the other main Langmore of season one is Russ. Brent Langmuir, which is Wyatt's and Wyatt's brother, who's oddly named Three, father.
Oh God, that's so funny. He's the third kid, so they just call him Three. Oh my God.
Which is kind of bizarre because there's only two of them, because Ruth is only a cousin.
Okay. Yeah, that is weird. I never thought about that.
Yeah. The whole thing's very interesting. So they're all, like you said, the main, at least the first half of the season one, the main antagonist, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then we learn about the Snells, who you mentioned earlier as another group of people who are the local heroin dealers and growers in the neighborhood.
And not very nice people.
No. And they, unfortunately, Marty mistakenly steps on their territory because he takes over the strip joint, which was what they were using to launder their money.
Well, not only that, but he then unintentionally disrupts their distribution because he finds this preacher who's preaching out of a boat on the lake, and as part of his laundry scheme, decides he's going to build him a church because apparently construction is an excellent way to launder money because you can, put all sorts of things in the books and they'll never know the difference. But it turns out that the Snells, the local heroin dealers, are actually using his sermons as a way to distribute heroin in the Bibles that they're passing out in the boats. So Marty really unintentionally totally pisses off these heroin dealers, and they have something to say about it.
Right. Yeah, and it is interesting how they do it too, because the lake, which is Lake Ozark, which is the largest, possibly the largest man-made lake in the United States, and also one of the largest lakes in the United States that are entirely in one state, mm-hmm. meaning that they don't touch any other states. And I guess based off of what we're told here is that the police department of each town around the lake, and this lake has more
coastline than California.
Exactly. Thank you. That means there's a lot of towns around the lake, and each town does not have jurisdiction on the lake itself. So if you're on a boat, you are in a different jurisdiction than the town that the boat is docked at. So
you got to put in a clip of that song from The Lonely Island right here. I'm on a boat.
I'm not sure on that. Fill me with that song.
Oh, Jesus. I'll send you a link.
Oh, yeah. Please do. Yeah, so that is an excellent way to get around police departments, because obviously there isn't a real or a major police department on the water. And so Marty unintentionally, like you said, he screws up everything. They're laundering and their distribution.
And all by accident.
All by accident, exactly. So as a result, Marty is in a situation where he now has to cooperate with these drug dealers. And the thing about these drug dealers is...
The other drug dealers.
Yeah, the other drug dealers. The
Marty, locals. Of course, son of a bitch.
Yeah, these drug dealers, just like the cartel drug dealers, we just know that they're powerful because we don't really ever meet many lieutenants of the cartel or of the Snells. But we do meet the Snells, as you said, and the Snells are fairly, psychopathic people as well, especially the Darlene, the wife. Jesus. She may arguably be my now favorite villain on TV, because she is just unbelievable.
She's pretty adorable.
Yeah, you know what she kind of reminds me of? She reminds me
a witch. She's a witch!
That's maybe true. She kind of reminds me of Anton Chigurh from No Country for Old Men, because she has a code.
No, she has way more emotions than he does.
Well, that's the thing. She's a little more reactionary, but she has a code just like he does.
Mm.
If that makes so she has an Anton Chigurh code, but she's a reactionary like Joe Pesci from Goodfellas.
I don't see it.
Okay, fair enough, fair enough.
I think she's just fucking nuts.
Yeah, yeah, she's pretty out there. But she does have some good points. I mean, you know, I mean.
I don't know if I call them good points, but I'll say she gets what she wants.
Right, right.
One way or another.
Yeah, exactly. So really what it comes down to is that Marty has to juggle between the cartel and the local heroines as Langmores, and then various other folks as well that play various other roles. For example, the local sheriff, who we find out maybe being blackmailed by the Snells, so that's why he gets a...
Oh, no, definitely is being blackmailed by the Snells. Yes. We don't know what they have on him, but we know they got something.
Right, right. This actor, I forget his name, but he was the store manager in the film The Mist.
Okay.
So he's a Louisiana actor. Cause I remember listening to the commentary about how Darabont, when he did The Mist, he just started getting local actors from Louisiana because that's where it was filmed. And this guy just came in and he liked them. And ever since, he's been getting decent roles here and there, including the movie The Bay. He was in that as well as one of the CDC people or whatever. But yeah, so there's that character. And then there's this motel / restaurant that he buys.
The Blue Cat Inn.
Yeah, the Blue Cat, and the woman that Rachel, I think her name is.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so she becomes a partner of his.
Well, I wouldn't put it like that. She doesn't know what's going on until it's too late.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, basically, she's just happy to get the money to keep the place working, and then she goes off and does her other stuff, which is bartend and have sex every Sunday night with a local or someone right. That's just staying there. Yeah.
It's like it's something everybody knows about. She grabs some dude and bangs him every Sunday.
Yeah. Let's see. So any other characters of note? Buddy.
Buddy.
Buddy. Jimmy Smalls.
Oh right, right.
Buddy.
That's such a weird thing, because the deal is they find a house, and they get a really good deal on the house, but the reason they get a good deal on the house is because the guy that's selling it is old and has a terminal heart condition, and one of the conditions of the price of the house is that he gets to live in the basement until he dies. So it's this old dude that's hooked up to oxygen all the time. And apparently just likes to be naked a lot. Because hanging around all the time.
Yep. Yeah. And so Buddy is his name. Later we find out his actual name is Jimmy Smalls, but he goes by Buddy. He obviously has a lot of money because the house is a fairly nice house. But the reason they're able to get it on the cheap this is because, again, they have to let him live in the basement until he passes. Mm-hmm. Because he claims that he doesn't have long to live anyway because he has COPD or some other, like you said, heart disease type thing, congestive heart failure or something. And they decide to take it anyway. Because everywhere else they went was they didn't like. And Buddy happens to say an interesting thing later into the season where he says that everybody who comes here permanently, not just for vacation, is probably running away from something.
Right.
And so generally, basically you get an idea that maybe he happened to be running away at one point too. And that's the reason why he's in the Ozark. Mm. Let's see. All right. So what else do we want to talk about? Is there anybody else that we missed, or at least in season one of note?
I think we hit all the characters.
Yeah, I think
you're
right.
Got a little plot to go yet.
Yeah. All right. Sounds good. So, Officer Petty, the FBI, goes down there undercover, trying because they now that Bruce is dead. Marty is his next lead, or the next person he can try to entrap to get to the cartel. So he's down there. Like we said, we have the Snells down there. We have the minister. And then we have the various other people like the Langmars and so forth.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about the FBI agent.
Yeah, okay.
Basically, he's hot on the case here, and the FBI knows that Marty Bird is guilty, but there's that whole darn proof thing that they need in order for it to stand up in a court of law. So they're after Marty, but they're trying to gather the proof that they need. And what's his face? Langmore.
Russ.
Russ, thank you.
Yeah.
Russ Langmore, as it turns out, happens to be gay. And the FBI agent, I'm forgetting his name.
Petty.
Agent Petty pretty much seduces this guy because he's gay as well. And through developing a relationship with him, is able to plant bugs and such to gather evidence.
Right. Yeah. He basically seems like he has some fondness for the guy, but mm-hmm. he's really using him to get to Ruth because he knows that Ruth is working for Marty.
Uh-huh.
But being the sociopath he is, and it's funny, too, because they show him in the morning waking up early, looking through this pamphlet that Russ made about how they can move to somewhere else in the country and open up a fishing store and all this other stuff. And it seems like he really is into it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he throws that away because more important is to just get the cartel. So he blackmails Russ.
Well, and the thing about Russ is, he hates himself because when Agent Petty first makes a pass at him, he beats the shit out of him. Says, "I ain't no fag." And
that's a quote from the show, not us.
Yeah.
No.
But so he beats the crap out of Agent Petty and then shows up at his hotel room again later and says, "I ain't no fag." And then starts to make out with him. So it's like, clearly he is gay, but he's having a really rough time of it because he lives in an area where it's not accepted, and he's had to be in the closet the whole time.
Right. And it's interesting, too, because there's a part in the movie, I mean in the show, where his brother, Boyd, so...
About to bring that up. I think I know exactly the scene you're going to talk about.
Yeah, when they're out fishing.
Yes.
And Boyd may know that he's gay.
He either knows or suspects.
Right.
And he basically says to Russ, "Look, if there's something that you want to be or someone you want to be, it's okay."
Right.
I'm here, and you can be that.
Right.
So the word gay never comes out of his mouth, but he's pretty much saying, "Look, dude, I know what's up. It's cool. I still love you." And I thought that was a really good scene.
Right. But Russ thinks about it and then he decides to hide it and instead says the opposite, like, those gays, I hate them or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. So the Langmars in a whole, they're kind of, unfortunate people, because they're, besides the father who's in jail, and besides the father in jail, even though he's a great character too, not a good person, but a great character, the rest of the Langmires are just bad luck people, because if
they're downtrodden,
yeah, if they could pack it up and move to somewhere else, they could be normal people. It's just that their circumstances have made them make wrong decisions.
Well, and it's partially the dad too. Yeah. God, I hate that prick.
He's a bully of the whole family.
Yeah, he's a bully, and in season two he gets out of jail, and basically like Ruth has made all this progress, working for Marty and being in charge of the club, and is starting to see a future for her brother, being able to go to college because he's really smart.
You mean her cousin?
I keep on thinking she's one of them. And basically he gets out of jail and berates her for trying to go legit.
Improving herself. Yeah.
Yes. He berates her for trying to make a living in some sort of white collar enterprise and says, look, you're a thief. That's what you are. You can't not be that. You're going to steal this from me. You're going to do this for me. And basically forces her to commit crimes at his bidding, even though she's really, that's not something that she wants to do. He's a bastard.
Yeah. And he's very smart too, because he knows how to manipulate people, because one day he yells at her. And then the next day he says, yeah, I'm sorry. If you want, let's go look at that house in the white collar neighborhood that you said you wanted to possibly buy.
Uh-huh.
But he says it because he knows that she's going to say, no, forget it. It was a stupid idea, Dad. You're right. Because she has daddy issues and wants to be accepted by him. And so he uses his power over people for Ruth. She wants approval. And so he gives her, berates her, and then when he's about to give her approval, she has to say, no, Dad, you're right from yesterday, because she doesn't want to say, okay, let's go look at that white collar house like you said we should now, because she knows that he's just going to get pissed.
Right, right.
It's very interesting. And so, yeah, the whole family is kind of scared of him in a sense.
Well, and they should be. He's a raving psycho.
He is, yeah.
There's a lot of those in this show.
There is. Yes, there's at least... All right, so Del, both Snells.
Yeah.
Ruth's
father. Langmore, yeah.
Father Langmore, the FBI agent.
Yeah.
Helen, who's the lawyer for the cocktail.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Are all like sociopaths, and Helen's we meet in season two as well.
And as it turns out, maybe Wendy.
Yes. Yes. That's what I'm thinking as well.
Yeah, that was kind of a wrinkle they threw in at the end of season two.
She's like the Lady Macbeth, right?
Yeah, she basically orders someone whacked at the end of season two and seems to have no qualms about it.
No, not at all. Well, see, that's the thing. The whole thing is very curious, because we learn that Marty is introduced to Del, and because they have some flashbacks, and he works on his books for, you know, a free 1 hour session.
Uh-huh.
And he shows his brilliance and how he says the books will look a little off, and these are the reasons why. Because if someone really dug into it, they could see inconsistencies, or they could see consistencies that are too consistent.
Too consistent, yes.
Yeah, and so Del is impressed. And Marty's looking at this as a challenge to launder the money when he finally learns who Del is,
mm-hmm.
rather than as something that is probably just, you know, let it go and let someone else do it.
Right.
And that last push that lets him decide to do it, in other words, to take the challenge because he thinks it's an interesting challenge, is Wendy, who says, yeah, do it.
Uh-huh.
And that's the first sign that Wendy may be complicit as well. Plus, we do learn that Wendy's career prior to having the children was politics,
yes.
Where she was the talking head that you would see that would basically lie to make her candidates look good.
Yeah, she would run political campaigns for candidates.
Exactly. So, by the end of season two, which will be curious to see where to go for season three when that comes out in 2019 or beyond, how much of a gray character, if not a complete villain, they're going to make her?
I think it'll be significant.
Yeah, because, I mean, their plan at the end of season two was once a certain thing happens, they were going to move to Australia on the Gold Coast, which is near Perth or the West Coast, which is, even though some big cities there like Perth, it's still a very rural section. It's basically like Las Vegas, and then all around it, there's nothing. So they were going to move there, and it's the smart thing to do if they don't want the FBI life where they have to go from, you know, change their name and all that. Never mind the fact they can escape the cartel among other groups. But for some reason, she wants to stay. And the only reason she would want to stay is because she is going to become a... Yeah, exactly. Because
she wants to get back in the game. She likes collaborating with the cartel. And... Yeah, and also she made the right decision, because as much as going to the Gold Coast seemed to be a way for them to get away, at the end, what's the lawyer's name again?
Helen.
Helen basically tells her, "Yeah, we were monitoring all your online transactions. We know that you were arranging that, and we were going to kill you if you ran."
I missed that.
So basically Wendy saved them all by forcing them to stay.
Okay, all right, interesting. I didn't get that. Nice.
Well, I mean, it was more subtle than that. She was just right. Like, you know, basically it might seem like a good idea to get on a plane and go far, far away, but we would find you.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and Helen's almost like trying to groom Wendy to be an evil scumbag, just like Helen's an evil scumbag.
Oh, and Wendy is into it, so I'm intrigued to watch that develop.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be very interesting. So the Langmars are basically a group of fuck-ups, as Ruth keeps saying, and Wyatt, her first cousin, and Russ's son, is the quote-unquote hope of the family, because he is smart and also non-corrupted, like Ruth is. Because Ruth is very smart, too. But she has a record, and she has no qualms to do bad things.
Mm-hmm.
While Wyatt is completely clueless to the criminal activity, except for whatever the adults tell him to do type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Wyatt's a pretty good guy. He's a nice kid.
No, he is. He's confused, but that's to be expected in his situation.
Yeah, I mean, when your mother has run away and your father is killed in a freak accident that was possibly related to where he was going to do a crime himself, the father.
Mm-hmm.
You could figure that the kid's confused. Is a good way to put it, rather than messed up.
Well, and then there's the kids, the bird kids, who the daughter is kind of a typical teenage girl, all about being on her phone all the time. And the boy is kind of a nerd. And it's right after they first get there, for some reason.
Yeah, Wendy tells
Wendy decides to tell them the truth about what's going on, and it kind of messes up a lot of stuff. I don't think that was a good decision on her part.
No. I mean, you mentioned that you've just watched the television show The Americans, and the kids in that show, at least for a good portion of it, had no idea what was going on.
Right.
And that's what it should have been with these kids here, but for whatever reason, Wendy had to tell them, and I forget why. It was an
The daughter called her out on it later, which is basically like, you told us what was going on so that you could try and get us on your side versus Dad.
Right.
But you cheated on him. You're not good either. So stop it. And now you don't have any right to say anything to me about what I do.
Right. Yeah. One of the best scenes was when later in season two, where they're all at the dinner table and they're talking about what they did today. And then, the parents are talking about something with the cartel and then, or the Snells or something. And then they ask the daughter, so what did you do today? And she goes, I stole a book. And a book from the antiquity shop.
Uh-huh.
It's worth a lot of money. And they go, why would you do that? That's terrible. And she goes, right, what? You guys are talking about cartel stuff, and I stole a book.
Right. You guys are laundering money for the cartel, and you're yelling at me for stealing a book? And she's got a point.
She does. Who knows? Speaking of the dinner table, another really good scene was when the four of them were there, and they invited Ruth over. And Ruth's sitting there, and then Ruth looks at everybody and goes, do you guys do this every night?
Yeah.
Because she's never had a dinner with a family in her entire life. That's the difference.
Right.
Her life is, you know.
Yeah, the family never sits down over the Langmores.
Yeah, so if she had been grown up in a different household, maybe she wouldn't have been a criminal or whatever. But not that the birds aren't criminals, but that's besides the point. So what happens is basically at the end of season one, Marty has to get everything back to normal again.
He's got to get the local drug dealers working with the cartel drug dealers, and he actually comes up with a brilliant plan of using the property that the Snells own, flooding a portion of it so that it technically connects to the Mississippi, and they can build a river casino, a riverboat casino, and it's actually a stroke of genius on Marty's part. And so he sits down with Dell and the Snells and comes up with this whole plan and pitches it, and everybody's on board. And then at the very end of season one, like one of the last things that happened is they're wrapping up this meeting, and Dell says to Marty, only you could get me to go into business with a bunch of rednecks. And Darlene says, what did you say? And he turns around and starts to say, I said, and his head disappears. She blows his fucking head off. And it's one of the most shocking moments I've ever experienced. It's so brilliant.
And then Marty's expression, too, is like the viewer's expression. He's like, his mouth just drops and he goes, what did you just do?
Right.
Dolly has a good point, though.
And I love it when, like, I can't remember if it's a few minutes later or if you had to wait until season two for her delivering this line. But at one point, she goes, I may have overreacted.
Yes, I think that was season two. That was awesome.
I may have overreacted. Jesus.
But when after she does it, she goes, you don't come into my house and insult your host. You just don't do it. So the proper solution is the bros bite out, I guess.
Yeah, well, yeah, it all makes sense. Yeah.
It was awesome, though.
Oh, God, that was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it was disappointing and awesome. And I'll say, let me explain why it's disappointing. Because no matter how despicable characters are on the show, they're all awesome. Every character on the show is awesome.
Yeah, you were hoping to see Del go.
Yeah, we get to see one of the best characters of season one just killed off.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, holy shit, they just killed Del.
Right.
And that's the thing that I love about the show is that every character, there's not one character on the show that irritates me as a character. They may irritate me as people, you know, because they're evil or whatever. But
a couple of them irritated me. Darlene's one of them.
Oh, really?
And yeah. The other one was the preacher.
Yeah. If there's one that did irritate me, it was probably the preacher. You're right.
Yeah. So let's talk about the preacher.
Okay. It sounds good. Let's talk about the preacher.
The preacher we see in a flashback that
one of the best scenes of the show.
Was it New York?
Yeah, so it was a big
some city. Big city.
Yeah.
Basically, one day he was walking along, minding his own business, and came upon a corner store being robbed, and walked in and basically got shot by the robber, but lived. The bullet missed his heart by like a quarter of an inch or something, and he took it as a sign from God, and moved to the Ozarks to start preaching the word of the Lord. And he does this out of his boats on a lake and gets caught up in this whole mess between the Snells and the birds because he had no knowledge of the Snells distributing heroin during his sermons. So basically Marty comes in, and because he wants to launder money for the cartel, he volunteers to build a church for him to preach out of. And the guy's like, he kind of resists it at first, but he's like, yeah, okay. And then he gets really excited about the church. And that's when the Snells step in and go, look, motherfucker, you're screwing up our drug distribution. You will not build that church. And if you do build that church, the preacher's pregnant wife is going to have something horrible happen to her. I don't want to see another thing. I don't want to see another nail put up. I don't want to see a cross put up. I don't want to see any progress on that church. You're not building it. And Marty's like, okay, I message received. Loud and clear. And so he starts trying to stall the preacher. And the preacher really wants his church at this point. And then he goes and the preacher goes without Marty's knowledge and puts up a cross at the site where the church is supposed to be built. And almost dies that day because the Snells are on his way over to the house, and Marty pretty much meets them there at the same time and does his pretty talking thing and gets the preacher and his wife out of it. But eventually Marty tells the preacher what's going on, and he decides that he's going to refuse to preach anymore because he can't do it, knowing that drugs are being distributed during his sermons. And because of that decision, he comes home one day, and last time he saw his wife as she was pregnant, he comes home one day and finds
a baby.
cleaned and swaddled on his table, and his wife is nowhere to be found.
One of the best lines, even though it's creepy as hell, is when Darlene and Wendy are arguing about that, and Darlene goes, hey, I was the one that gave birth to that baby.
Yeah, I delivered that baby. It's like, yeah. Oh, no, I wouldn't call it that.
No, you cut open a stomach and pulled out a baby.
So they don't actually show us what happened to the wife. But
yeah, thank God.
She's dead.
Yeah, we don't want
to see that. And they cut the baby out of her. And because of that, the preacher gets super whiny for some reason.
Well, I think it's because he's had a complete nervous breakdown, and
right.
He's mentally gone.
He is. Yeah. And he starts preaching on the sidewalk, and he knows the truth about the Snells and what they do now, and the Snells are all nervous about it. And somebody calls the police and has child services step in because he's got his baby with him while he's preaching on the street in the cold. So they take his baby away, and he totally snaps and basically kidnaps Wendy and wants to do a trade Wendy for the baby. And right. Marty actually manages to somehow make that happen.
But then he changes
his mind as the last instant.
Yeah, Marty uses Wendy's friend and the guy that's going to help them get the casino, not Wyatt Langmore. What the hell's the guy's name?
I can't remember his name.
Yeah, but there's this other character that's fairly big in the show, specifically season two.
He was influential in getting some legislation passed to allow the construction of the casino.
Exactly. And so he's the one that is able to get the baby from Protective Services.
Mm-hmm.
That was the one episode out of all 20 episodes that was the seventh the episode of season two that kind of was the weakest episode, I felt.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because I think it's like you said, the preacher's character by that point is kind of whiny and nervous breakdown and all that. That, and it also took us out of the regular main story for one whole episode.
Well, yeah, at the same time, they need to do it to get rid of him.
Right.
Well, they need to get rid of him.
And they need
he needs to not be a part of the story anymore.
Right.
Well, and also Darlene was insisting on having the baby given to her. But yeah, so basically, the preacher changes his mind at the last minute and is holding a gun to Wendy's head because he's saying that they're just the worst people in the world and they can't be allowed to continue. And so Marty's forced to shoot him and he kills him and it totally fucks him up.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because the last three episodes of the season, 8, 9, and 10, he's almost like in a zombie trance. And
yeah, Wendy, he's nearly comatose.
And this is when Wendy takes over and becomes the
conniving bitch.
Yeah, exactly. The mech. or however you pronounce it,
Machiavellian.
Yeah, Machiavellian. Yeah. One of the best was when Marty gives Zeke to Darlene just to get Darlene off their back, and Wendy goes, "How could you give Zeke to that freak or whatever you know?" She calls her. And he goes, "You got to do what you got to do." Yeah, but it was just awesome how everybody knows Darlene is just like insane.
Yeah. Well, there was a line, too, that Wendy threw back in his face later. And she's like, "You didn't talk to me about that." He was like, a decision had to be made. I didn't have time to argue.
Right.
And that was when he decided to give the baby to Darlene. And then later, when Wendy decides that they're not running, that they're staying in the Ozarks, and Marty gets upset about that. And she goes, "Well, a decision had to be made. I didn't have time to argue."
Right.
It's like,
right.
So, oh, back in your face, buddy.
Yeah. It's a tit for tat thing going on now rather than working together.
Right.
Yeah.
And one little wrinkle that crops up in season two is that the daughter wants to emancipate because both of her parents are awful people. And basically, she's trying to blackmail them into emancipation by saying that if they don't let her, she'll tell the authorities about everything they do.
Right.
And after Wendy decides to make them stay, Marty's starting to wonder about Wendy at this point and has snapped because he had to kill the preacher. He says to his daughter, if you still want to emancipate, I will not stop you. Go. Be free.
Right. Yeah, because I mean, now you know, because when you got the cartel and the Snells,
the Kansas City mob,
Kansas City Irish mob.
That's what season three is going to be all about, is the Kansas City mob.
Yeah, I'm thinking you're absolutely right.
And they call it the Kansas City mob because they don't want to call it the Irish mob.
Right. Even though they say they're Irish many times earlier.
Yeah, but they don't call them the Irish mob. It's the Kansas City mob.
You're right. Yeah, right. Yeah, it's the Kansas City mob. And it's kind of sad, the whole thing, because Marty just wants to get out from under the mob or cartel or whatever as easy as he
all
can.
All of them.
Yeah, and just get the fuck out.
He just wants to live.
While Wendy is kind of more... Even earlier is kind of more into it. I mean, not into it like
Wendy's
at the end, but she's a challenge.
In season two, because Wendy was not happy about any of this until season two. And in season two, they have to try and turning political wheels in order to grease some palms and get this legislation passed for the River Casino. And she remembers how much she enjoys being involved in shenanigans like that. And she sees their relationship with the cartel as giving her the opportunity to do much more of that and put herself in a seat of power.
Right, exactly. So season two, even though it's a way to try to find a way to escape to Australia, it's also a challenge. And what she's good at you know, in other words, she's a duck in water, basically, in season two.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, while Marty in both season one and season two is just, his only point is to just get the hell out somehow. How, you know, get the money laundered and get out.
And speaking of ducks in water, it turns out that Marty's son, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, because the kid, pretty much on his own, has figured out how to launder money online and set up several offshore accounts to do so. And I think that's awesome.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and his best friend is Buddy, who was working for the Teamsters back in Detroit prior to moving to the Ozarks.
And we
find out that, yeah, maybe he had some connections to the Irish mob, exactly, the Kansas City mob. Yeah, so.
And Buddy leaves us in season two. I mean, they told us up front he didn't have long to live, but he passes away in season two. Which is a bummer, because but he was a very funny character. I liked him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the best was when he took out the Mexican cartel guy.
Right.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's awesome. Oh, and then when the Snells kind of make it sound like they're going to threaten Marty's kids, he goes, and they say, we're all going hunting. Buddy goes, I'll go too. And he comes out with this big shotgun, and he's carrying his oxygen tank. And it's like, no, don't matter. I'm coming.
Yep.
But that's another thing that's interesting about season one, is they make the son look like he may be a budding sociopath, because he's interested in dead animals and all this other stuff. And what we find out is just like a red herring. Really what it is he's interested in trivia, really, because that's what it is. Like the Starlings, you know, and invasive species and all that. And he likes vultures. And how they're, because he'd never seen him in Chicago. And so he finds corpses in the forest and he guts them and he brings them and throws them on his driveway so the vultures will come and he can watch the vultures. Uh-huh. But his parents think that he's murdering animals and vivisecting them because he's a psychopath. And right. So there's a lot of red herrings about his character throughout. And we still really don't know much about his character. Is he going to be a criminal, or is he just doing what kids do in the
He's totally going to be a criminal.
You think so?
Okay. Oh, yeah. He already is one.
Yeah, that's true. But I thought it was just because of the surroundings that he's in, not because
surroundings aren't going to get better.
Yeah, especially now that Wendy's gone psycho. Yeah.
Yeah,
because Wendy's becoming like a Darlene now. So, yeah, that's true. That's a shame, because I honestly thought he was just a person with curiosities, with a moral compass that just is pointing in the wrong direction, similar to how some of the Langmoyers are, rather than an actual possible budding criminal. So, but yeah, you could be right. You know, it's interesting too. I've noticed is that this show, they don't have, even though this, you know, it's a soap opera, I mean, a genre soap opera in a sense, they don't really follow the kids' lives in school and all that stuff.
A little bit, but not in detail.
Yeah, a little bit, and not in detail. And I thought that was a smart move.
Yeah. You don't want to get dragged down and all that.
Yeah, we've seen enough shows that get ruined because they go off on stuff like that, where they this one here, they're focusing on the important stuff.
There was one scene in the first season that made me laugh, because the daughter is out on the dock at the Blue Cat, super short shorts with basically half of each butt cheek hanging out, and Marty says something about her about changing clothes, and she basically tells him to piss off. And so then he's on the way back inside, and some guys start saying something to her out of the dock, and he turns around and goes, "She's 15, assholes!"
Yeah. One of them goes, one of the guys drinking beer, going, "Oh my god, look at that hot chick, her ass is hot." It's kind of funny.
Yep.
Typical teenage daughter. It's like, oh, Jesus, what are you going to do?
Oh, just you wait. You got about, 12 years?
Yeah, less than that now.
It's going to come up faster than you want.
Yeah, 11 for one and 13 for the other when they turn 15. So coming quick. It's coming quick. Yeah.
Oh, you poor bastard.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Panic!
But yeah, you're right. There's other things. Yeah, no kidding. about the son too. I forgot that. Yeah, that's right. It wasn't really that innocent as I thought, because he was selling his to do other people's homework.
Right. Right. He got in trouble with that.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're right. Yeah. So maybe you're right. Maybe his moral compass is already correct.
Yeah. Like father, like son.
Yeah. Well, and he's the actor that plays him is really good, because he plays one of those people. He plays it with no emotions.
Right, right, right.
You know, so he's never angry. He's never sad. He's just there. And it's kind of disturbing how he plays it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and I think that's intentional, the way they're writing the character.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, because they wanted us to think in the season one that he was becoming a serial killer because he was killing animals.
Right.
Yeah. And though obviously it was miscommunication. Now, let's talk about Helen a little bit.
Okay.
Oh, my God. She is pure evil, too. Another nice, good, evil character on this show.
I like her, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, she's awesome. Yeah, and she's smart, too. So she's a lawyer who's brilliant. And she's one of those, like, Robert Duvall characters from The Godfather, where she only has one client type, and that happens to be the mob. And she has no issues giving the go for hits.
Yeah.
So she
has no moral compass either, and she just does what needs to be done.
Right, right.
And in season two, when Wendy comes to her, it's actually about Ruth's dad, because he's become a problem.
Right. Because
he's trying to get Ruth away from them, and they really need her to be part of the operation at this point.
Right, right. And he's blackmailing them, too, for $500,000.
Oh, that's right, that's right. So they need him to not be a problem. And Wendy goes to Helen and starts to say something to her, and Helen stops her and goes, don't tell me about what you're about to tell me about unless you really want to tell me about it, because once I know, I can't not know, and I need to do what needs to be done.
Right. Oh, and then she says, also think about it, because once it is done, you will be a different person forever.
Right. And Wendy goes forward and tells her that Ruth's dad is a problem and needs to be taken care of. And Helen pretty much puts out a hit on Ruth's dad.
Right.
And it doesn't seem to faze Wendy very much at all.
No.
Whereas Marty totally fell apart when he killed somebody. Right. Wendy orders somebody dead and has a moment of regret, but then moves on.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. So that shows a different type of personality between the two and the directions they're going. The thing about Ruth's father is unfortunate, because it's like you said, I mean, he's obviously,
I hate that guy.
Yeah. I love the character because he's awesome, but yes, he's a bad guy. So losing him was unfortunate because he's an awesome character, but it's not.
See, I had actually gotten to the point where I liked Ruth enough that I fucking despised that guy, because he was just totally ruining her life. And I want to see Ruth succeed, so I totally hate that dude. I'm glad he's dead.
No, all right. Yeah, I just loved all the characters, and I thought he was awesome, too. But he fucked up, because he could have had the white-collar life, because Ruth was making good money, like white-collar money. Now, mm-hmm. Working for Marty, and was going to get the house and all this other stuff. And not only that, but she also got her father basically the head maintenance and groundskeeper and boatman and
at the Blue Cat.
Blue Cat. And that would have been huge white collar money, too.
But for some reason, this fucked up guy looks down upon legitimate professions and prefers to be a criminal. He thinks there's. Right. There's more pride in being a criminal somehow. I don't get it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing is it's not like he's a petty criminal. It's not like he's the mob, like the cartel making millions of dollars a year. Right. I mean, if it was making $1 million a year, I still would frown upon it, but I could at least understand it.
Uh-huh.
This guy's not making anything, and he still wants to be a criminal. So it just makes no sense, except that he's insane. Because he could become legitimate and actually make damn good money.
Right.
And
but he doesn't want to.
He doesn't want to. Right. And he's not stupid, because even though he's a, you know, backwards, you know, whatever, whatever, he's, you can tell that he has some intelligence too. He, like Russ, his brother, who mm-hmm. was the gay guy, he actually was pretty smart too.
Yeah.
It's just that they all, it's interesting because they're not stupid people. Boyd, that acted real dumb. He was, the Langmoors are actually smart people. It's mm-hmm. just that they, yeah, that they are not using common sense.
Well, and they're uneducated.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because if an immoral compass in some cases is wrong too, because for example, Ruth's father, if he had a normal moral compass, he would say, holy shit, I'm out of jail. I'm about to get this awesome job.
Right.
That's guaranteed.
Things are looking up.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to have people under me. I'm going to be doing, you know. And he goes, no. He goes to Marty. He goes, no, I just want you to pay me, and I'm not going to do anything. And Marty goes, I ain't going to do that. He goes, well, to hell with you then. And it's like,
right.
Oh, shit, what a dumbass.
Right, right.
You know, because all he had to do was tell Marty. He goes, well, Marty, I'll take the job, but I'll need 3 or 4 people under me. And Marty would have probably said, sure. And then he could just be a manager at an office and do nothing.
Right.
You know, so he had so much opportunity. And he's just, like you said, he just has a moral compass that's like criminal is all that matters.
Right.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate. So he's gone. And then the FBI agent gets taken out. That was somewhat shocking, too. And it was odd. It was shocking who took him out, too. It was Father Langmoor, because I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting someone else, like the Snells or someone, were going to take him out, or Rachel or something. There was a couple of only one flaw in the whole show, I felt, which was when Rachel and Marty were texting each other.
Yeah, that was a little lame.
Yeah, well, and it's a cool idea, and I've seen it in other films, but when you're working as an informant for the FBI, and the FBI has the warrants, you don't want to be texting on your phone where they can keep track of stuff.
Right. Right.
So, yeah. So I felt that was a mistake in the screenwriting.
It's a small one, though.
It is. It's a small one. Yeah. So, were you happy that the FBI agent got killed?
Oh yeah, fuck that prick.
Yeah, but he was an awesome character.
Fuck him. I'm glad he's dead.
Were you happy that Jacob Snell got killed?
No, actually. Season one, I would have been. Season two, I came to like him a little bit. And Darlene was the bad one. I wanted to see her die. And there was a great line delivered by Jacob Snell in season two, which he's talking to Marty. He goes, what do you do, Marty, when the bride that took your breath away becomes the wife that makes you cower, or makes you, oh shit, I wrote it down somewhere, but it's basically what happens when the bride that took your breath away is now the wife that makes you hold your breath in fear. And it's right. Like, oh fuck. and then the Snells go out into the woods taking a walk together. And I thought that they were going out there and that Jacob was going to shoot her because she'd become a liability and too unpredictable. But if that was his plan, he didn't get to execute it because she fucking poisoned him.
Yeah, basically what happened was is that the cartel came in and wanted to check the drugs to make sure that it was high quality. So they do their, you know, chemicals tests on it. And Darlene and Jacob are pissed. Because they're insulted,
mm-hmm.
and Marty goes, "Yeah, but did you count when they gave you the $6 million for the drugs? Did you count it?" And they go, "No, we didn't count it, but our men did." And they go, "Right. The reason that you had men count it was because you had to audit it. This what they're doing now with your drugs is they're just auditing
right.
your drugs to make you know." And it's a brilliant argument. It's absolutely right. It's like because if I was insulted and someone told me that, I would go, "Oh yeah, actually, you got a good point there. You're right. They're just." Making sure it's legit, just as I made sure they didn't chip us on the money. Mm-hmm. But Darlene, you know, and it seems like Jacob's all right with it. He goes, all right, that's fine. So Jacob's good with it. And Darlene pretends she's good with it. But 4 or 5 episodes later, it's still bothering her that mm-hmm. they had to test the drugs. So what
she's
does,
just a psycho bitch.
Right. So what happens is she poisons the drugs the next time they come to take the drugs. And it goes on the street and a lot of people end up in the hospital because of it. Mm-hmm. And they trace it back, both the FBI and the cartel trace it back to the drugs that came from the Snells.
Yeah.
And then Marty is forced to talk to the Snells and say, what the hell's going on? Because we're in trouble now. You're fucking up everything. And Jacob figures it out. And so he confronts his wife and he goes, did you poison the drugs? And she goes, why does it matter? They're just junkies anyway. They're all losers that had taken the drugs.
Right.
And he goes, that's not the point. And so she goes, well, those people don't trust us. So if they're going to think our drugs are shit, we'll give them shit drugs. And so Jacob is then told, basically has to make a decision. Basically, it's implied by Marty that something has to be done because the cartel is going to do something. Mm-hmm. So Jacob says to himself that he's going to have to kill his wife, which is devastating.
Uh-huh.
But Darlene figures it out as well that, okay, she fucked up and the cartel is either going to take us out or we have to give them an offering in a sense. Uh-huh. So in other words, they both plan to kill each other. And she just happens to do it before him because she's more ruthless while he isn't as ruthless as she is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, is that to correct things with the cartel, you have to do an eye for an eye. And so earlier, when they kill Dell, they have to kill their number one lieutenant, which is a guy named Ash.
And, right.
And Darlene holds it against Jacob
mm-hmm.
because she loved Ash like a son. And it wasn't even Ash's fault. Ash was just doing the job, right? I mean, Ash was told to cover up the murder by swiping the credit card, Dell's murder by swiping the credit card up in Chicago. He just happened to be on film doing it at a gas station, and that's how the cartel found out it was the Snells that killed Dell. And so when Jacob kills Ash, he's killing Ash simply for the fact that he swiped the credit card in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Because Ash didn't do anything. He did not kill Dell, nor did he betray anybody.
Right, right.
And so Darlene has always held that against Jacob. And then, of course, Jacob and her are forced to kill someone else because they fucked up the drugs. And mm-hmm. to placate the cartel, they try to kill each other.
Well, and it's all Darlene's fault. All that shit. It's all Darlene's fault. And in season one, there's a scene when we're first introduced to the Snells and just how badass they are. There's a scene where Jacob is talking to someone on his porch about something that they...
Oh, the strip joint owner.
That they didn't approve of. And at one point, Jacob says to Darlene, hey, Darlene, why don't you go get us some lemonade? And she go get some lemonade and comes back. And the strip club owner starts drinking it and then drops dead because it's poisoned. So it appears that this is a thing they do on fairly common enough basis that's like a code for them. If Jacob asks for lemonade, that's what he wants to happen. And there's a point in season two where he's talking to, I can't remember who he's talking to. It might be Marty or it might be the preacher. I can't remember. But he's talking to him and he hasn't said anything yet. Darlene's like, I'll go get some lemonade. and he's like, no, I don't think we're ready for some. I don't think we're ready for the lemonade yet, sweetie.
That was awesome. Oh, another good thing too is when the FBI decides to raid the Snells' farm, and so obviously they have poppy plants growing, which is heroin. So they have to get rid of it, but they refuse to do it. They think their sheriff is going to protect them from the FBI, so. The cartel tells Marty, you got to get rid of that poppy field. So Wendy and Buddy go and take out the poppy field. And when the FBI does come, there's no drugs, but they find five bodies buried in the back.
Mm-hmm.
One of them you can guess is Dell. Another one you can guess is the preacher's wife. And the other one is, you know, on and on and on. And so... so they've probably done a lemonade trick a number of times for people in the backyard.
Well, no, those bodies weren't those people because they did DNA testing and they're related to the Snells. It was their ancestors that had been buried on the land, but they didn't exactly know where.
But that's not true, Eric. I think you must have missed it. What happened was it was the wife of the preacher, and it was Del, and they say it later. But what it is Marty comes up with a plan, and they go into the burial graveyards, and they dig up old Snell bodies with Darlene, and Darlene's pissed. We're desecrating our ancestors. And he goes,
oh, well, I did miss that.
Yeah, yeah. And he goes, well, what do you expect? What you had, you screwed everything up. And so what they did was they used the sheriff to go through.
Oh, they swapped out the bones. Right? Gotcha. All right.
Yeah. And so the bones were old Snell bones from 150 years ago. Snell bones, because they switched them. Yeah, exactly. They swapped them out. Yeah, I'm surprised you missed that.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, you may have to watch season 2 all over again.
I don't have fucking time.
I know. Yeah, but yeah, that was one of the most brilliant parts of the season 2, I felt. I'm surprised I missed it, though. Well, what are you gonna do?
You'll get over it eventually.
Yeah.
Talking about it.
Because I still can't believe you missed it.
Well, get over it. Let's move on.
All right, let's move on. So what else do we want to discuss? Anything else?
I think we've hit all the major points.
Yeah, pretty much. I guess the only other thing was is that. Yeah,
the Kansas City mob. That's just where we end up at the end of season 2. Is that the casino is officially approved?
Yeah, go.
And it's gonna be operational. And one of the deals Marty had put in place with the Kansas City mob was to have all the construction be union jobs. But one of the deals they had to make in order to get the legislation passed to actually have the casino open required that to not happen. And so now the Kansas City mob is going to be very, very angry with them.
Right. And there's two things wrong, that happens. Because first of all, Marty is expecting he's going to be in the Gold Coast in a month anyway, so he doesn't give a rat's ass. So even after the...
That's right. It's a calculated risk because he doesn't think he's going to be around anymore.
Right, so the Kansas City mob destroys his office, but it is what it is because he's gone to Australia, or at least that's what he thinks. And the other thing is Buddy's not around anymore because Buddy has passed away earlier in the season, and Buddy was the connection to the Kansas City mob guy that could probably cool him down a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And with no Buddy, he hasn't no one to vouch for him anymore. So you're right. So season 2, 3 is probably going to have something to do with the Kansas City mob.
Oh, I think it's going to have everything to do with the Kansas City mob.
Yeah, exactly.
My big question that I can't really see an answer to is whether or not Darlene is going to be satisfied enough to just stay the fuck out of the way at this point.
Right. Yeah, well, that's the thing. I'm already worried, though. I'm sure you'll be happy because you don't like the character. Or if you like the character, you still think she's an evil scumbag, so I hope she's dead. Well, I don't want her to die because I just like the character. I think she may be one of the few taken out quick in season 3. I think Wendy's going to take her out.
I think without Jacob around, the Snells need to go.
The whole
dynamic there was the play between the married couple, and now he's gone.
Right. And there's no lieutenants of significance that have been main characters, so they would just have to make up new characters from the Snell.
So before it was the crazy lady wanting her crazy lady things and the rational husband finding a way to make it happen. And now the rational husband is gone, so now she's just a crazy lady screaming into the wind.
Right. Yeah, so I'm thinking it's either going to be Wendy that's going to do something to get her taken out, or the sheriff won't have as much fear of the Snells anymore, and he's going to be able to do it.
Well, I don't think it's going to be that one.
Yeah, you're probably
right. The sheriff is pretty much useless as tits on a boar.
Yeah, well, I think he knows how things work, and so he... You're right. I don't think he's that. I don't know what he's done. We don't know what he's done to be blackmailed. It could be anything from just, you know, cheating on his wife. Who knows? But the thing is he doesn't seem like an evil guy. So if he takes out the Snells, it would be highly unlikely for the character's personality. So you're right. I'm thinking it's going to be more likely to be Wendy. And Wendy would be the perfect one to do it because, like, most people, like you said, probably don't like the Snells. I mean, Darlene Snell. And Wendy's the perfect character to do it because she – it would continue her arc as
yes.
The evil bitch, as you called her.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
– well, plus she was really, really upset about Darlene getting the baby.
Right, Zeke.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, so that's what I'm thinking. She's out to get Darlene because she wants Zeke back, or yep. at least Zeke.
Or she doesn't want Zeke to be with her.
Right, in a proper home.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So that'll be one of the story arcs. How long that will last, whether it's the whole season or just partial, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think I'm thinking she's going to be get wiped out quick, but you're thinking she's going to stay longer as a?
Well, no, I'm wondering. See, again, it's been a little while since I finished watching season two. I can't remember exactly where the Snell's involvement with everything was left. Because if I'm remembering correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the Snells aren't needed anymore, are they?
No, the only thing they're needed for is the heroin, and that's it. Because the casino will just run itself with legitimate people.
Right.
And the only point of the casino is to launder the money from the heroin.
Right.
So,
well, yeah, but the cartel doesn't. What am I trying to say? Cartel? I thought the cartel was mainly dealing cocaine, weren't they, or was it heroin?
It was. I think it was everything, but it was specifically related to the deal for the casino was specifically for the heroin by the
yeah. Store. Okay, but yeah. What I'm trying to communicate is that even without the Snell's heroin. The cartel does not need the Snell's heroin in order to continue doing business.
Right. I would agree.
Because they were fine before they met the Snells.
Right, right. Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And technically the Snells don't need the cartel either, but unlike the cartel...
Well, they kind of do, because if they don't cooperate with the cartel at this point, they'll get squashed.
That's what I mean, exactly.
Yeah.
Right, right. Yeah, so it'll be good. Interesting. You said your opinion that there's a chance that you think that it may not be a 1 year per season. You're thinking that it'll be more like Game of Thrones or Westworld, where now that it's a big show that they can spend more time producing it, and it could be a year and a half away, so 2020.
It just seems to be the way things have gone. I mean, you know, Jessica Jones, even though, you know, that stuff has been taking longer, I just think that... Yeah, it just seems to be a trend. All of the shows that get popular are taking longer breaks between seasons.
Especially cable television shows.
Right, but even Netflix and the streaming places are doing it too.
Oh, right. Let me rephrase. I didn't mean cable, but I meant the non-regular TV shows.
Okay.
In other words, the non-ABC, NBC, CBS.
Yes. Non-broadcast.
CW. Yeah, non-broadcast. Exactly. Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, I keep on forgetting that Netflix is actually not cable; it's called streaming.
right.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because most of my HBO now is really just streaming. I don't watch it as cable anymore. I watch it as a streaming.
I don't watch anything when it's on anymore. The only thing I watch when it's on is live sports,
right,
and specifically NFL football.
Right. Yeah. So. Yeah, and with me. I don't watch really any regular broadcast TV at all. I just watch HBO Now or Go or whatever it's called.
Well, and I got the Red Zone channel, so I don't have to deal with commercials on Sunday for football. So, like, watching Thursday night and Monday night football is excruciating for me because all of a sudden I got to deal with the goddamn commercials again. And I'm just like, ah, fuck, I've already seen this one 5 times tonight.
the best Eric volunteers this information on Facebook. Red Zone, 8 hours of commercial free football.
That's right. It's awesome.
There you go.
Fuck commercials. They're just as bad as trailers, if that not worse.
Because trailers are commercials.
Yeah, but you don't see trailers every 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's true. But they do suck because they ruin all the movies.
Yeah, trailers. Fuck trailers and fuck commercials too. Fuck them all.
Absolutely.
It's fuck everything that's not what I want to watch right now.
Exactly. Exactly. I should just be able to press a button and watch it when I want.
I think I'm doing a fantastic job of transitioning into a cranky old man.
Yes. Yes, you are.
We all need goals, right?
Absolutely. And that's as worthy as any goal I know. Absolutely. All right. So any other Ozak things that you wanted to bring up, except the fact that the show is fucking even better than how we're talking about it?
I mean, yeah, it is. I mean, we've hit all the main points, and we still haven't gotten into all the details, and some of the details of this show are brilliant. So I don't really have anything else to say tonight other than I highly, highly recommend the show.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, we've been fairly unemotional when we've talked about this show, but the show is like screaming awesome. Like when your favorite football team scores a touchdown, awesome. And the scenes, when those scenes show up, like the Bruce scene in episode one, or the preacher flashback scene, or Dale's end scene, you know, on, I mean, when these scenes happen, they are awesome. And even though Eric's happy some of the characters are dead, they're still awesome characters that have been killed off. So it's so just, yeah, it's awesome.
Well, it's like there's I'm trying to think of a character in the show that's just good.
Right.
And I can't think of one, because even the daughter, she might be the closest, but yeah, even she does some fucked up stuff.
Right. Right. Well, and even when she's her scenes, they're good scenes. I mean, she's probably the most normal human being on the show. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the reason why she's just quote unquote good. Right. Mm-hmm. But she's good.
Right.
She's real good, you know? And, yeah, obviously she's throwing a wrench into the family because she's the one that is trying to get out of it and all that. So that makes us kind of turn away from her a little bit, because obviously it's fun cheering for the chaos, anarchy, and fucked up situations. So when she tries to go normal and everything goes normal, it's like, you're ruining our show.
Yeah.
But again, though, it works with the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and her storyline. So yeah, yeah, good stuff. Any final thoughts then? Anything else?
Nope. I would just say, if you enjoyed Breaking Bad, I'm not going to say that Ozark is as good as Breaking Bad.
It's better.
That's a high bar, but
it's,
I would
better,
say it's, well, that's your opinion. You asked for mine. I'm trying to give it. I would say it's almost as good as Breaking Bad, and definitely in the top tier of series that are available.
Right, right. For me, I simply have three words. Best show ever! And you can get it streaming on Netflix now. So if you're a member of Netflix, start watching it.
It is a Netflix original, so you have to go there to get it.
Yeah. And if you're not a Netflix member, you can get it for like a month for free anyway, and so you could probably watch both seasons by the end of the free trial. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely highly worth checking out.
Yep.
So yeah, that's where you can get it. So it is available everywhere, all 20 episodes. And if you have questions or opinions, and we would love to know your favorite characters you hate, and if you hate them, do you still love them like I do, or do you hate them where you really hate them? So I would like to hear all your feedback. So darkdiscussions@aol.com. And I guess with that stated, Eric, why don't you leave us out?
All right, thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about Ozark tonight. Come back next time, we'll have another topic.
Best show ever.